The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Now, one of the reasons that I love Cool Stuff Inc. is because of their rewards program, which you become a member of just by making a purchase. After that, every purchase you make pushes you towards another level of the program, which means even more savings. Right now, I'm on level 6, which means I save 8% on all of my magic singles and 2% on booster boxes and board games. So head on over to CoolStuffInc.com and start saving money today. Hey friends, welcome to episode number 18 of the Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And thank you so much for joining us. The gang is all here. We do apologize for missing you last week, but we also appreciate your patience for in dealing with us while we sort out our sound issues. We felt really, really bad about last week, and our listeners were pissed. Yeah, we received one or two tweets that were like, how could you do this? I think someone even sent us a screenshot and was like, can you tell me what's wrong with this picture? And I was like, you've listened to all of our episodes?
And I was super confused.
Yeah, I'm sure they didn't mean it like in a negative way, but I had no idea. I was like, it's just a week. People will be fine. And like, people were really jonesing for us. So thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and get started. So women of excellence this week, we actually had two of them, and they're still pretty viable this week, so we're going to go ahead and nominate them again. The first one is Autumn Burkett. She's from the UK. She recently played in an RPTQ and won, so she's going to the Pro Tour. Congratulations, Autumn.
Yay!
And she also happens to be a trans lady, so even more yay in representation. The other person I wanted to nominate is Suzanne Heidemüller. Suzanne came in 11th place at GP Lille, and she is also the front runner to be the captain of Ireland's World Magic Cup team. She'll be the captain. So keep doing the damn thing, and we're very proud of you, Suzanne. A little clarification from our last episode. The woman that we nominated for Women of Excellence on that show was Asuka Joy Ghost, and Asuka informed me that the email we had for her was incorrect. So if you are interested in working with Asuka and helping her cause, you can email her at signatures4artists@gmail.com. And let's go ahead and get started. So this past weekend was the pre-release, I believe, that we all played to various degrees of success. Hallie, why don't you kick us off? How'd your pre-release go?
Mine went pretty well for the most part. I was originally scheduled to play in two pre-releases, one on Saturday evening and one on Sunday morning. But as often happens at my store, there were openings in the Sunday evening, so we decided at the last minute to play in that one also. So I played in a total of three. They were very lopsided. In the first pre-release, I picked green, played green-white, and went 4-0.
Nice.
In the second pre-release, I picked white, played a red-white aggro deck, and went 3-0-1. There was one match that we never got to finish because my opponent played kind of slowly. It took over 20 minutes to play game one and then like 25 minutes to play game two. And it, you know, pre-releases are at regular REL, and sometimes it's hard to deal with slow play at regular. So I, you know, encouraged my opponent to play faster, and that was pretty much all I could do. So anyway, I still finished really well. And then I played in a third pre-release, and my pool was not great, and it seemed like all the bad variants I had missed out on earlier just all came at once. So I did pretty poorly in that. I think I went like 1-3 or something. But overall, it was pretty fun. I enjoyed the decks I played, and the set looks pretty sweet.
Now, didn't you tell us last week during our botched recording that you were going to take it easy this time?
I was, but oh well. I mean, the bug bites you, you know, it just is nothing you can do about it.
I remember you poured it out. You were like, oh, you know, I've got a dog now and a job and a family and class. And, you know, I can't really be bothered with all that stuff, you guys. And then, and here you are back to being Rambo at the steps, you know, ba-dum-bum. Or is it Rocky?
It's Rocky.
Rocky. I just had this image of you like doing sit-ups and like, you know, hanging from the bar and I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Katie, how'd you do?
Oh, I did miserably. So Friday night, I was going to play our midnight, but I was kind of tired. So I just hung out and watched everybody open their stuff and saw the building. And then I went home and I had to work for a lot of hours on Saturday. So Sunday, Brooke and I went and we played two at a Giant and we went 0-3.
Oh, no.
And like neither of us has gone 0-3 for a very long time. And we were looking at each other and we were like, how could this be? Like, we top eight stuff. We do pretty well, but it just was not our day. I don't think our decks were bad. It was like every time we were prepared for something, it was like something different that got us. Like one game, the guy played like three dragon fodders and two of Trondra's parents and just had like all these thopters and stuff. And then they had the equipment that you can equip and it gets +1/+1 for each other creature you have. And so they were just hitting us with like a 1/1 that became like a 10/10 that was just flying. And we were like, oh, well, this isn't going well.
Yeah.
But I don't think our decks were necessarily bad. I think that we both had more fun than we usually do when we play Sealed. Neither of us is a huge fan of Sealed, especially to a Giant because all the rules are wonky and not always the most fun. But yeah, we had a good time going 0-3.
Now, when you play Two-Headed Giant, are you the type of person who you like to stay in your lane? So, like, typically when I play Two-Headed Giant, you know, one of us is, like, the turn-the-card-sideways player, and one of us is the control-type player who clears the way for them. And then some Two-Headed Giants are, like, you're both just double aggro, like, you're both just, you know, being really aggressive. Like, do you tend to play the same role every time?
The way Brooke and I do it is we pull all the cards, separate by color, weed out what cards are good and bad, and then we try and look at where some overlaps are to pick our color combinations, and then we just build a deck, and then at the end we're like, do you want to play this deck or this deck? And then we just decide. So our roles really flip-flop, but we do work together a lot more than a lot of Two at a Giant teams I've seen. Like, sometimes when you play against a team and there's like no communication between them and they're both just kind of doing their own thing, we're like, this is a team event, you know, like you guys can talk to each other and like laugh and make a plan and stuff. But we're very much, once we're in the game, it's like one lane, I guess. We both sit like in the very middle of our mats almost. And we're like lean together. Like, what should we do now? So
neither one of you is what I like to call the limpy gazelle, where you have like, have you ever seen like the two-headed giants where the one head is doing everything and then the other head is just like, yeah, yeah, that sounds good. And they're constantly like, they don't do anything without the other head telling them to.
Oh no, no limpy gazelles here. We only have strong cheetahs or whatever other analogy you want to make.
Yeah, I coined that phrase back when I was doing the deck tease, and I was reminded of a scene in Will and Grace where, you know, I can't remember the context. I remember Will and Grace going back and forth, and she was like, I'm the limpy gazelle, and I was just like, oh, that's perfect. And you know, you don't find it too often, but every once in a while you come up against those pairings where you can clearly spot who the limpy gazelle is, and God bless them. But
yeah, the world needs all kinds of gazelles to go around.
Absolutely. Chris, how'd you do?
I did pretty poorly. I picked blue, but I didn't
really
build anything with blue. I didn't build anything with like blue hardly, because the overwhelming color choices were green and black. So I decided to do a green-black elves deck, splashing some blue for some funny cards. So I ended up pulling three Thornbow Archers, which was pretty dope, because that card is awesome. And then I also had a Gnarlroot Trapper, so I was like, okay, we're definitely doing elves here. I had a Fetid Imp, which was cool to give a death touch, still had a flyer to kind of come over and ruin their world. And Catacomb Slug was cute and big, so I was like, I'll do that. But what was funny was I ended up getting a Sphinx's Tutelage, so the first game of round one, I just milled my opponent out with Sphinx's Tutelage, and that was pretty cool. I also had a Tower Geist, which was nice to have, two Mantle of Webs, So I didn't really have, like, really any bad cards. I got a Sylvan Messenger, which was cool. And I pulled a Yavimaya Coast. So I had that in there, too. So round one, I played a guy that was doing, like, this blue-red deck. And I don't know if he plays a lot or anything, but I had to keep reminding him of certain things. And he was appreciative of that. But I ended up sweeping him. Then the second round, I played this guy who had green-black elves with that big Colossus and Rogue's Passage.
Ooh.
So, it was bad. And he's like, yeah. He's like, can you believe I pulled this Rogue's Passage with this? I'm like, I can believe it. So he, like, destroyed me, but super cool guy. So we talked about a bunch of stuff. And then round three, I had to play a person that I don't usually care for playing very much because he always comes off as kind of condescending. And we had some very heated games, like two and three were kind of bad. He ended up beating me. I was at one, he was at three, and he was just able to build back up from where he was at. I don't even remember what his board was, like a four color weird deck. So I was kind of salty about losing that. So round four, I played this guy that the deck he was playing versus me was not the one he started with, and it was just like amazing. He's like, I don't know why I didn't start with this from the start. I'm like, I'm starting to wonder the same thing. So he destroyed me with like some big like green creatures and stuff, but he was a super nice guy. But at that point I was like, I think I'm done. Like, I don't want to play anymore. I'll take my cards and go home. But it was cool to get some cards. Can't wait to roll around in them on Friday when I get more. But all in all, it was a good time. I didn't do the midnight one, though, because I was too tired. So I just did it Saturday. I'm like, we'll do it then. So, but good times.
When you say you were, like, heated, were you guys, like, emotionally heated? Like, were you mad at each other? Or were the games just, like, intense?
They were intense, but then he just, I don't know, he just always has this little air about him that I just don't like. I guess you would have to know him to see it, but so we're always doing this back and forth. I'm like, come on, I know I can beat him. I'm just like, I know I'm a better player, I think my deck is better, and I just couldn't come back from where I was at. And so it was just like, ooh. So at the end he was like, good game. I'm like, mm-hmm. So then at the end, like, when we started cleaning everything up, he extended his hand and he was like, good games again. I'm like, yes, thank you. But it was just like, it took everything in me not to be like, you're the worst person ever. Why did you have to ruin my day? That was what I was saying on the inside. On the outside, we had a very gentlemanly, I guess, handshake and tip of the hat type of thing. But whatever. But otherwise, it was okay. But no, he's just not my fave person to play against.
Yeah. So I chose green. I decided to do something different. I've been really looking forward to playing elves with the release of Origins. And I was thinking maybe I could, you know, pull enough elves to make an elf deck happen. I actually only came up with seven elves, and neither of which was the Lord or anything like really, you know, good with it. So I ended up not going elves. I did open a Goblin Pile Driver and a Jace because clearly I love blue and red. So I will be trading those off the first opportunity. I didn't really have anything good. My bombs were I had the Avaricious Dragon, and then I had the, it's like a 3/2 red, and it's a Hellion. It's like trample, and then anytime a red source deals damage, if it does like double the damage or something, or one more damage. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have enough red to really make it work. I really wanted to play something other than black and green because that is sort of my wheelhouse, but I do like having opportunities to do something else. And when I had my friend Vinny look at it, he's like, you know, you really don't have enough here to go other colors. Like, it's not good, but it's better than what you'd have if you did anything else. So I did end up going black and green. I ran into a lot of white. Like, I was eating Celestial Flares constantly. And mm-hmm. Celestial Flare is such a demoralizing card because if it's black removal, they can just kill it anytime they want to. But with Celestial Flare, you have to do something. Like, you can't stall them out. You can't stalemate. You have to try to attack, and you have to try to block, but you have to play around it in such a way where you're constantly like, okay, I have to attack with two or more, and I have to block with more than one. And I just don't enjoy playing around that card. So I was tired of eating Celestial Flares all day. The most memorable deck that I played against was a guy at my store named Nick. And Nick and I always get paired against each other. It doesn't matter what format it is. So Nick sits down And the first thing he says to me is, my deck's not very good, which in my experience means that their deck is fantastic and that they just don't see it. So the first thing out of he says is, well, my deck's not very good. So it appears to be blue-black. Through the first three turns, he does nothing. So I'm like, all right, blue-black control. Got it. Cool. I'm with you. Turn four, he goes Demonic Pact. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm like, all right, I just got to survive for what, three turns? I've got this. So then he plays Dark Petition and he searches for something. And then he plays another Dark Petition. And the modes of Demonic Pact are really, really strong. Like, he was able to keep me at bay for the two or three turns just from the discard two, just from the four and four life and all that stuff. So on the upkeep that he's going to lose, he goes Disperse. So I'm just like, okay.
Ooh, shady.
Oh, we're not even there yet. So so then the turn that he disperses it, he follows it up with a Sigil of the Empty Throne.
Oh, no.
So then the following turn, Demonic Pact with an angel.
Yep.
Yay! Ooh. So I'm thinking, okay, I just got to survive another four turns. I've got this. So he's chipping away at the, and he had a little dice on the Demonic Pact so he could keep track of the modes that he used. So he was like mode one, blah, then mode two. And again, I'm thinking, oh, he's gonna go. And then Disperse. He cast, he had three Disperse in the deck and was able to cast Demonic Pact three separate times.
Wow.
Yeah. And like I said, the modes are also powerful. So I had nothing. And he was able to win with the angels. And I even said to him, I was like, you know, your deck looks really good. Like, I'm not really seeing the problem here. Mm-hmm. And he did beat me. He did lose to the Demonic Pack once. But in the other two games, it was just constant, like, Disperse. He even had Languish. So he had a really good Esper control deck with this enchantment bouncing. And I would have totally played that. I was not mad to lose. And other than that, I didn't really have a lot of fun. I went 1-3 and then I dropped, and I had an old friend from Canada that was in town, so we went out to dinner and we caught up on life and everything, and that was about it. Like I said, I had fun socializing, but that was about it. So after the pre-release, we came back to the real world, and on Monday, there were two announcements. The first one I think we were all looking forward to was the banning restricted announcement to see if anything was banned, and nothing was banned. Some people were surprised by this and happy about this, and others were not. How did you all feel about this?
I wasn't super surprised by the lack of bans. It seems like they've been sort of saving up the bans for whenever there's a new modern tournament coming up to kind of shake up the format and make it more interesting to watch. So I don't believe there are any major modern tournaments coming up soon. I know there's going to be a GP in Oklahoma City in September, but otherwise, like, I'm not all that surprised.
I was initially surprised, but what Hallie just said makes a lot of sense.
What do you think about people who, you know, like you said, Hallie, you know, they might be saving it up for a pro tour. What do you think about people who say that that means that Wizards only cares about the format once or twice a year? You know, what about those of us that have to play that format, you know, that aren't going to the pro tour and do play Modern frequently, and now we have to deal with the Amulet of Vigors and the Grishul brands and those decks that seem to defy the rules of Modern? Like, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is really unfortunate, but I'm still of the mindset that the format can adjust to whatever is going on, and I mean, we had a new set just come out. We have another new set coming out in October that we know virtually nothing about, so it's possible that there are some hate cards coming up that we just don't know about, so I guess we'll have to see what happens. Like, I have faith that Wizards wouldn't intentionally, you know, serve up a miserable format for us, and that there is some kind of relief coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also wasn't surprised about the lack of bannings. It seems to me like, you know, I feel like if you want to beat certain decks, you just board for those decks. And I feel like people really just haven't gotten to the point where they're like, I want to beat Amulet Bloom this tournament, so I'm going to board for it. And then, I mean, it's pretty typical of Magic players, I think, to like to complain about certain things, and I feel like these two decks are kind of that thing. Like, if you don't want to lose to Amulet Bloom, just play like some paths and have them on turn one. Like, Modern's just such a very sideboard dominant format. Like, you just have to have the right sideboard cards at the right time. And so I'm with Hallie in that I think that the format and the people playing it can just adapt if they're willing to change a little bit.
Well, the problem I think with that is that there are so many decks in the format. Like, the format is so diverse and you only have 15 sideboard cards. And, you know, Modern has been described as being a format where you basically have to ask yourself, what am I okay losing to? Because you can't cover everything. I know when I followed Willie Edel for a while, there was a time where he had completely abandoned the burn matchup because he was like, I just don't have the room to board for burn. And frankly, the matchup is already so bad where I'm just going to abandon that. I'm just going to worry about pod and affinity and things like that. And I'm somebody who has sideboarded in against Amulet, but, you know, a Fulminator Mage with a good Amulet hand can be too slow for that. So I would argue that some of the cards, especially Grishelbrand, you know, that deck can get going on like turn two, turn three. And unless you're boarding in something really, really narrow, like Blood Moon, Leyline of the Void, you know, Grafdigger's Cage, and getting it out early, I would argue that some of your sideboard cards might not even make a difference because it'd just be too slow or what have you. So, you know, my theory on the bannings has always been, it was my understanding that Modern had a very hard turn four rule. Like, nothing was supposed to be winning before turn four. And if it was, that was problematic. And that was something that people might need to deal with. And I feel like we have two very good examples of decks that are able to do that. And so I wasn't hoping that they'd be banned because I don't like them or anything, you know, personal or emotional. It just seems to violate rule number one of the format. And that's why I was surprised that nothing happened, because these decks very clearly do that.
Yeah. My interpretation of that rule, like the turn four rule, because I've also heard that, was consistently winning before turn four. And I don't think either of those decks are very consistent for that fast of a kill. Like, it can happen and it sucks when it does. But for the most part, you know, I mean, I've seen those decks just do nothing for like multiple turns where they're like, oh, it's just not coming together, it's just not doing what it's supposed to do. And so I think that they're giving up a lot of consistency for like the 1 in 12 games or whatever where they can combo early.
Sure. There was also a rulings change. I admit I'm still not really clear as to what this means. So Katie, you're a resident judge, why don't you break it down for us?
Yes. So every time there's a new set, sometimes there's new changes to the IPG, which is the infraction penalty guide, or to the MTR, which is Magic Tournament Rules. With Origins, Toby Elliott released a blog post stating some changes that are going to be made, I guess, starting immediately. The biggest one and the only one that I think really matters to players is drawing extra cards at competitive. So this used to be, if you put a card in your hand when it's not supposed to go there, it's drawing extra cards, and that used to be a game loss. So the game was ended on the spot regardless of if you intended to do it, if it was a sleeve that stuck to another sleeve. Regardless of the intention behind it, it was a game loss. And so they've changed this to be a warning. And they're trying to make it, I guess, a little more user-friendly, it seems. They think that the game loss penalty that used to be in place was a bit harsh, when regarding what the actual infraction was. So, especially if it's an accident where you're like, oh, I just grabbed two cards because I thought that enchantment was still in play that let me draw two or whatever. They thought it was harsh to make somebody lose the game because of a very accidental mistake. And so they've changed it to a warning. And what happens now is that if you were the person that drew the extra card, you reveal your hand to your opponent, and your opponent selects a number of cards equal to how many you have in excess. So if they find out you have two extra cards in your hand for some reason. Your opponent gets to choose two cards, or in most cases, just one. And then that one card gets shuffled into the random portion of the library. I saw a lot of people that had questions like, well, what if Coursers out and my top card is revealed? The top card will stay the same. The rest of the deck will be shuffled along with this card. And then that card will be put back on top. So that's the biggest change. And I've seen a lot of debate about people, whether they like it or not. I'm not convinced that I'm a huge proponent of this yet, but I'm willing to, you know, judge a few tournaments and see how it works out, I guess.
Why do you feel that way?
I feel like, I mean, there's certain mistakes we just don't want people to get in the habit of making, mm-hmm. and a warning and having your opponent look at your hand. Like, if your opponent's new to Magic or something, maybe they don't know the right card to take. And I feel like something like that puts you at a big advantage. Obviously, we can still do investigations and whatnot, but I just feel like having it be a warning instead of a game loss doesn't really hit home the message. Like, I feel like it's a mistake that's more likely to be made more often rather than somebody who's like, oh, I got a game loss. I'll try to never do that again because that's really bad. But if it's kind of just a slap on the wrist, I feel like somebody's more likely to make that mistake, whether it's intentional or not, again.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's an alternate form of, I don't want to say punishment, but like, so it sounds like you agree that a game loss is extreme. Like, am I right in that?
In some cases, yes. Okay. In some cases, I guess not. I don't know. I haven't really come to terms with that yet.
Okay, because it sounded like you were saying that, you know, the game loss was too much, but that this is just not the right form of, you know, punishment or warning. Like, so I'd be interested to see if there's like a happy medium or if there's an alternate, you know, an alternate option.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people saying like, well, a game loss is too much, but this isn't a good fix. And Toby Elliott's response was kind of like, well, this is still a better fix than a game loss, isn't it? And people were like, well, yeah. Some people were advocating that the judge picks which card goes into the library, and that really puts judges in a bad spot. If you don't keep up with the format and you can't really make strategic decisions, or, you know, if that person happens to be your friend, somebody might think that there's something going on that shouldn't be going on. So that's why they have the opponent do it instead of the judge.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't really have I wasn't sure what to think about this because I've never personally experienced that. Like, I've never received a game loss for that reason, and I've also never played against somebody who has. Like, I didn't know that the warning, that the punishment was that severe. So I was interested to hear that, and I hope they can think of something. You know, I agree with you, Katie. It sounds like it should be judged on a case by case basis, but I don't know if you have the ability to do that in a, you know, a 2,000 person GP with so much going on. If you have the time to really sit there and say and scrutinize this warrants this punishment, whereas that one doesn't. And I don't know, but I hope they come up with something.
Yeah, they try and keep things as consistent as possible between tournaments so that if you go to, you know, your local PPTQ versus a Grand Prix, they want all the rulings to be the same. Or at least as consistent as possible. Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has. Okay, anyway. So they try and keep it as consistent as possible between tournaments.
Yeah. So this coming weekend is the deadline for the Hall of Fame votes. The community has been given the chance to vote for who they want to be in the Magic Pro Tour Hall of Fame. And I have to admit that my choice changed quite a bit since the last time we recorded. I learned some things and I opened my eyes a little bit, but I'm still very eager to hear who you all are going to vote for. So Hallie, why don't you kick things off?
Sure. I'm still not completely sure who I'm voting for, but at first I was really kind of daunted by looking at the list of all the people who are eligible, just because, you know, as someone who's still, I guess, relatively new to Magic, since I've only been playing for less than 3 years, there were a lot of names I didn't recognize. But I sort of reevaluated things and started to realize that, you know, the iconic names are the iconic names for a reason. And, you know, those are the people who I probably will be more likely to vote for, just because, like, being involved in the community and, you know, putting up good finishes into the present day era is obviously really impressive, and looks great on a Pro Tour resume. So, I've still been, you know, looking over things, just poring over the charts of who has this many Pro Tour top eights and GP top eights and whatnot. But hopefully I will come to a decision in the next couple days.
No names you want to name yet?
Not sure. Yeah.
Okay. Katie, how about you? Who's on your ballot?
I'm still locking in the final ones and if I want to have final ones, but for now I am looking at Eric Froelich, who's obviously just kind of been killing tournaments lately. Willie Edel, I think he does great things for his community. He has the finishes. I think that he's just a really awesome person for Magic and, you know, in the game and in the community. And then also, I'm still researching Mark Herberholtz. that last name always gets me. I have not heard a ton about him. I've heard his name being, like, thrown around lately. And so I want to look into more about who exactly he is, what he does in Magic, and other things. And then Craig Wesko is also on my list. I think that he is always, you know, kind of an upstanding community member, and turns out guy's pretty good at Magic. So on my next ballot, if they do this again, I want to keep an eye on Stanislav Sivka. I think that he is, he's kind of young for the ballot. Like, his finishes and things are not as impressive as some other people, but just within the last year or two, his name is repeatedly coming up. He's been putting up good finishes as of recent. So in the next few years, I have some high hopes for him too.
Did I ever tell you the story of how I first met Craig Wesko?
Oh
God, I was such a lunatic. Okay, can I tell you? Okay, so I was on the plane ride home from GP Richmond last year, and Craig happened to be on the plane with me. And I was seated all the way in the back near the bathroom, and I saw him coming towards the back because he obviously needed to use the restroom. And I don't know what came over me, but I queened out so hard. I was like, Craig, Craig, let's go. And I'm waving like a lunatic, and everybody around me is like, who's, and then they look at me and they look at him, and he turned like 8 shades of red and just gave me this really discreet like,
hi, like,
and then I was like, Craig, let's go, Craig. I go, okay, stop now. And yeah, I just totally lost my mind. I was so excited to meet him, and he looked at me like I was nuts, and I'll never forget that moment of how I met him.
I'm sure the passengers around you won't either.
It's pretty good.
At least it's better than when I met Conley Woods. Like, I completely freaked out when I met Conley. And I think I did with, when I first got in the community, I queened out on just about everybody. Like, Jackie Lee, I lost it with, and Kibler, of course. Yeah, I kind of miss those days, but.
I scared Jackie Lee to death in the first GP Vegas. Mm-hmm. We were staying in a hotel that was like right up the street from the convention center. And it was in a really sketchy neighborhood, just because we wanted to be close. And it was like the only one within walking distance. And we were all at the pool one night, and I was slightly intoxicated, and we're all just having a good time. And she walks by, and it's dark, and she's all alone. And they were like, hey, I think that's Jackie Lee. And I was like, Jackie Lee! And I like screamed at her, and she was like, oh my God. And she started like almost running. She was like power walking down the street. No. And I was like, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. So she probably doesn't remember that, but if she does, I apologize. I was just excited.
Oh man. So Chris, who's on your ballot?
I'm with the other two. I still don't know for sure who I'm gonna vote for.
You guys had a week and a half.
There's so many names.
Yeah.
And there were so many pre-releases to play in.
Yeah, there was a lot of things. But I still think that Saito is on my list. Dreg Why?
We'll get there. You first. You first.
Okay. George Fabiano, Sam Black, because I think he's pretty dope, and Craig Wesco and Andrew Cuneo. So I like all of them for different reasons, whether they did something good for their community or, you know, they're just good players, good people. So those are people I'm considering, but now I'm terrified to know about the Saito business. So you'll have to tell me.
So quick aside, Sam Black follows me on Facebook, like we're friends, and I feel so bad about it because he's Sam Black, like he's brilliant, and he goes on diatribes about like physics and gender and life and economics. And here I am posting about Diane Keaton movies and Britney Spears songs. And every time I post something on Facebook and he randomly likes it, I'm like, you deserve so much better than me, Sam Black. I am so sorry that you have to see my idiocy. Did I ever tell you the first time I actually had a discussion with him?
Mm-mm.
I will tell you about that too. So this was, I think it was the weekend of Tifa and Mike's wedding. And I made a comment on Twitter that, so OkCupid has these questions, like try to determine what your match is. And one of the questions was, do you believe that drug use can be like a romantic activity with your partner? And I made a comment on Twitter, like I said, something snarky about it. And somehow it got like retweeted or favorited and everybody chimed in. And somehow it got Sam Black's attention. And Sam Black tweets me. This is the first time we've ever tweeted to each other. And he weighs in on this. And he's like, well, fundamentally, a relationship can be built on blah. And I'm like, Sam Black, of all the things that I could be getting your opinion on, this is not it. Like, I would love to hear your theory on like mana bases or deck building. And oh my God, you're going to think I'm an idiot. And I just, every time I talk to him, it's just, I just always feel so inadequate. And that was just another situation where I was like, this is not how I imagined our first conversation going. Like, I didn't think that we'd be talking about a survey question on a dating website about drug use and dating. Like, oh my God. So,
yeah, Sam Black actually came to a panel that I spoke on once, which was kind of nerve-wracking for me.
Right?
Yeah. I was on a panel at GP Portland with Mike and Tifa, and we were talking about the Lady Planeswalker Society, and Sam Black showed up, and he basically just wanted to know, like, what he could do in his local community to support, like, the women in his community, even though he was a pro player. And he was like, you know, I don't want my status as a pro player to be too off-putting to people. Like, what should I do? And, like, I felt so, so inadequate, like trying to give advice to Sam Black, you know, someone who I would like to give me advice about magic things. So I just like didn't know what to say to him. I was just like, I don't know, you do you, man.
You do you.
Just like, you know, just be yourself, and you know, if you care and you want to support people, like they'll know and they'll appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. So when we recorded last week, I was very firmly in the Saito camp because I've been very open about the fact that he's brilliant and he's done so much for Japanese magic and all of that. And Adrian Sullivan wrote a post the Friday after we recorded talking about his ballot choices. And here's the thing. I know people who were friends with Jared Betcher. And when that whole Jared Betcher thing came down, there was this, they just couldn't reconcile it. And it's not that they didn't believe it. It's not that they, it was anything like that. But, you know, I had friends who were like, you know, I roomed with Jared Betcher. Like, we shared hotel rooms together. We've tested together. We've shared car rides together. You have a really hard time, you know, reconciling the cheater with the person that you would go on these car rides with. And hearing about more of what Saito has done, you know, there, I guess there was an accusation of bribery, stalling. Adrian said that as of the Super Sunday series, Saito was still stalling, and that he'd even been, the judge had to award extra turns or had to give them a time extension because Saito had been caught and they had to, you know, somehow compensate the opponent for that. So it, and Adrian Sullivan's a pretty reliable source. Like, if he says something's going down, it probably is. And, you know, I've always said that if somebody has shown that they've cleaned up their act or they've tried to, you know, I'm willing to overlook a lot of things, but it sounds like he unfortunately has not cleaned up his act. And, you know, I think if I have a scale and I put all of his accomplishments on one side of the scale and the shenanigans on the other side of the scale, I feel like the shenanigans just weigh more. And I would love to vote for Saito. Like, it really hurts me to not. But there's just too much where it just feels like he hasn't learned. And, you know, to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, I don't expect you to be a Boy Scout, but if there's a consistent track record of the stunt that you're pulling or something like that, I can't get behind that. So I'm probably going to throw my vote entirely behind Willie Edel, because I think he's done great things for Brazilian magic. He's like the godfather of Jund, you know, so he's done great things for black green decks, which I love. Beautiful family man, nice guy. I met him at Vegas and he was super smiley and super gracious. And he has the finishes and he's probably who I'm going to put my votes behind, but I just can't. And I'm sad for it. Like, it's not something I'm happy about. Like, I'm not like, fuck you, Sardo, but I just can't. Like, there's just too much dirt and it just keeps growing. So
That reminds me of when we recorded the previous week and I told you that if I found out anything really bad about Saito, it would like break my little heart. I think we're there.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's really hard. Like, you know, you don't, it's not something you take any joy in. Like, you know, it's not like you just can't. Like I said, you can't reconcile it. You know, like, you want to believe because he does good things. You know, it's not as if he's it's not as if he's a quote unquote bad person. But like I said, you've got to weigh it. And if one weighs more than the other, it's like, it can't. Like, I can still root for him. I can still, you know, follow him on Instagram or whatever. But for this, like, for a Hall of Fame, I just can't. I can't put my vote down. So
I hear you.
Yeah. So, Hallie, you recently undertook a pretty big project. You built a cube?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
It wasn't all me. My boyfriend, Robert, actually gets a lot of the credit for it. He sleeved the entire thing himself with the help of our friend Jordan.
Good.
So,
how many cards was that?
So a cube is supposed to be 360 cards or more. It has to be, obviously, 45 cards per person and at least enough for 8 people. So we have enough for 10 people. It's a lot of cards. We had to buy a lot of sleeves.
Okay, so what is the theme of your cube? Does it have one? Or how did you decide what cards were going in?
So originally, about 2 years ago, we drafted Modern Masters, the first Modern Masters, and we thought it was amazing. And we were wondering if we could build a cube that somehow expanded upon it. So we had an initial draft of a cube and had a lot of ideas. But when we actually, you know, thought about it in practice, we realized that the reason why several of the cards in Modern Masters are good is because you can draft them in multiples. And we also found that when we added more recent cards, especially some like powerful rares or really good draft cards from recent sets, they were at a much higher power level than some of the commons in Modern Masters. So what we decided to do was obviously still use Modern Masters and now the second Modern Masters as sort of like a baseline for a cube. A lot of the cards in those two sets, especially the rares and most of the uncommons and several of the commons as well, all made it in. But we just sort of focused on having a balanced and fun draft environment that highlighted what we love most about modern magic. Just like strong creatures, good removal, good synergy, a few combat tricks, and yeah, just a very good color balance.
I think I saw a Death Cloud in there too.
There is a Death Cloud, yeah. So we wanted our cube to be primarily a cube where you could draft two colors. And each color has sort of an archetype. If you dip into a third color, you kind of get a payoff for it, whether it's, you know, a reanimator deck or like Gifts Ungiven or like a bug gifts deck or something like that. But what we wanted to do was make it possible to draft a monocolor deck. So each color has its own kind of thing that it does. So we wanted there to be a mono black deck. We thought Death Cloud would be really fun. We thought Smallpox would be fun. We put in a couple of Black Devotion cards and some cards with a lot of black mana symbols and their casting costs. We have Bloodghast. We might put Despoiler of Souls in it, the new the new 2-drop from Origins. But yeah, if you want to draft a mono black deck, you can come draft my cube. It is totally viable.
Have you had a chance to test it out yet? Like, what have people thought about it?
We tested it out once. We were going to test it out again this past week, but we won a bunch of packs at the pre-release. So we were just like, let's just draft Origins. So we had a, I guess, like what you would call a closed beta on the 4th of July. We went to a 4th of July party where everyone happened to play Magic. So we just got all those people together and drafted. And it was fun. We definitely realized that there were like a couple of small changes that we needed to make. But for the most part, the archetypes behaved the way we thought they would. Red-white was a little more powerful than we expected, so we may need to tone that one down a little bit. That one, red-white won the entire thing. But overall, like, everyone had fun. People had some suggestions for, you know, cards that they thought could make the archetypes a little better. Everyone told us, like, what color combination they were in and what they first picked. So we got an idea of like what the more powerful cards were, and overall the feedback was really good. We had a good mix of people, like some people who had cubed a lot, some people who had a lot of experience drafting but not a lot of experience cubing, so it was good to hear their perspective as well. And we had one person who was very, very new to Magic, so, you know, she even, like, you know, talked about what she liked and didn't like about it, so all the different perspectives were really helpful.
Very cool. So, Katie, you picked up something the other day. You're dipping into something new, Legacy.
Yes, I am getting my itty bitty toes wet. I picked up my set of Stoneforge Mystics from Cool Stuff Inc. And I have 3 of my 4 Force of Wills, and I now have 1 Underground Sea. And I am trying to build currently some form of Stoneblade. I've been testing with Esper Deathblade, mm-hmm. because I have a really sweet Deathrite Shaman that's altered by Steve Argyle, and I don't ever get to play him, so I was like, might as well play it. So I'm working towards that deck. I guess the only things I really need right now are the 1 more stone or Force of Will. I need a Jit, and then I need, obviously, all of the lands that cost a lot of money. So that might be a work in progress. So I've been testing it out with just proxy cards and stuff. Legacy is not huge in my town or state currently. We have 1 city 2 hours away that has a really big Legacy crowd, but our store in particular does not. So what we did was we held an unsanctioned proxy legal Legacy tournament a few weekends ago, and it seemed like everybody was really enjoying it. So we might just keep having those where we can play for store credit and stuff. They just don't go in the reporter. And it seems like everybody really likes that. Some people have like half a deck and are working towards a full deck. So I'm hoping that with this sudden push for some reason that everybody kind of starts to work towards a full deck and we can maybe get Legacy going in little Montana.
Look at you making more of an impact in your community.
Look at us go.
Well, you're doing more than, I mean, like, you're recruiting judges and you're starting conferences and now you're like altering the meta, like, geez.
We're trying. Right. Brooke is playing Miracles, and I found out that that's a really bad matchup, and I was like, man, I can't do anything. And he was like, no, you can't. So I need to figure out how to crush him, but one step at a time.
Yeah, I'm getting better at Miracles. You know, I think I think the one thing I've learned is that with Miracles, you have to have, at least in Dredge's case, you have to have a nice mix of disruption plus pressure. So if I'm just Cabal therapying you, that's not enough. I need to be, and I have to slow roll. So I can only bring out 1 Icarid at a time. I don't necessarily have to go off on turn 2. I want to kind of slow build, 3 damage here, make a zombie, Cabal Therapy. Again, next turn, 3 damage, make a zombie. Because for me to go all in, all they have to do is top deck a Terminus and then everything is for nothing. So I'd like more practice against the matchup, but I actually haven't faced it in the last 2 dailies that I did. I did, however, go 4-0 in my first daily the other day.
Yay.
I was very excited about that. The daily before that one, I had to file a reimbursement report because Firestorm did not act right for me, and it cost me a game, and I was livid. So I filed a ticket, a report, and I got my tickets back. And then the next day, I was like, all right, goddammit. So I was still livid about what happened, and I went into it with no expectations. And I beat Jeskai Stoneblade. I beat 4-Color Delver. Elves, and then my last game was against Ad Nauseam Tendrils, so I was 3-0 going into it. And the minute I saw that they had nothing in their hand and I was able to resolve a very early Grizzlebrand with a shitload of zombies, I felt really good. And I felt better going into game 2, because if I can just resolve Iona, I'm home free. So game 2 starts, I had Iona on turn 3, I believe. I had ripped their hand apart with Cabal Therapy, Iona naming black, and I was shaking. I was like, Iona? And then it asked me to choose the color, and my hand was shaking, and it was like, blue, green, white. No! Black, because I didn't want my hand to shake and choose the wrong color, and then I throw everything away. And all my opponent had in their hand was a Ponder, and I was pretty sure they had no way to deal with Iona. And sure enough, they did not. And then they showed me their hand, and of course I won. So I was 4-0, and I was so excited I couldn't breathe. My heart was pounding. It took me about a good 30 minutes to calm the hell down, but I was excited. I was ecstatic. And the 5K is this weekend, so I'm hoping I can recreate that success, because it feels really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it's been neat learning all the tips, the tricks of the deck and things like that. And Katie taught me how to hold priority, because Dredge can, on turn 1, I found out you can cast Faithless Looting when you have a Lion's Eye Diamond out. And if you hold priority and you say you're holding priority, you can, in response to the Faithless Looting, you can crack the Lion's Eye and dump your hand and then start dredging right away. Mm-hmm. So I did that a couple times. So I'd be like, Faithless Looting.
The more you know.
Yeah. I'd never heard of such a thing. Like, I remember asking you, like, is this real? Like, how do I declare that? And you said that you literally just say, you know, after the spell, you say hold priority. Yeah. And then you can do that. So I'd never done that before. So that was really fun. And I was like, whee! I was just going off. And it's okay if the opponent counters the Faithless Looting, because I've got that 3 red in my pool, and the dredgers are in the yard, so I'm good. So felt really good. So listener question this week: if you have questions for us, you can send them to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. we are happy to answer them, even if they are not about Magic. And our question this week is a good one, at least I think that it is. And this is from Scott in Ottawa, and he says, hello ladies, I've been listening to your show since day one and must say I find it really interesting and enjoyable to hear a female player's perspective. This past weekend I was in Montreal for the Grand Prix. After scrubbing out day 1, I played in a bunch of side events and had the chance to play against a couple of really nice women. The first one said that she played in the 2013 Montreal GP and felt that there were a lot more women playing this year. But she also felt that most competitive male Magic players were dicks. Her words, not mine. But after playing against a former Pro Tour player later on in the day, I would certainly agree with that statement, and that this was really hindering more women from playing at competitive events. I also played against another woman later in the day. We were just chit-chatting during the round, and she mentioned that she had a boyfriend. I promise I didn't bring it up. But that comment made me furrow my brow, because she was wearing an engagement ring and a wedding band. She noticed the look on my face and explained that she wears them to help deter unwanted attention from guys at events. I immediately understood, as some women at my workplace have also done the same in the past. We call it the buzz-off ring. Most of my coworkers who've worn them in the past say that it works at least a little bit. Anyway, I was just wondering what you thought of these issues. Keep up the good work.
I've never known anyone personally that's done it, but I think if it works for her to not have to deal with certain unsavory elements, then I think that's a good thing. I think it's sad sometimes that we feel like we have to do that to deter unwanted attention. But I say if it works for her to keep doing it. I've never had to do it before. I've never had to, like, either lie about a relationship or anything, but maybe I just don't get weird unwanted attention.
Yeah, I had never actually heard of this phenomenon before we received this email. And I also think it's unfortunate that she felt the need to do this. I mean, it seems to imply that she has received some unwanted male attention at Magic tournaments, and that is very unfortunate. But I actually saw an interesting thing on the internet today. I think you retweeted it, Erin. It was the Tumblr post by the Wizards employees, or maybe it's like the Wizards community managers or something. And they were basically giving tips on the polite way to ask out someone at a Magic tournament. Basically, just like, don't bother someone during a match. Don't ask someone out during a tournament. Like, if you like someone, obviously talk to them, be friendly, but don't make them uncomfortable. And if you want to ask someone to hang out after FNM or hang out at some place that isn't a Magic tournament or a game store, like, totally do that. Like, see if you have other things in common. I, you know, am very open about the fact that I met my boyfriend through playing Magic, and he, you know, we would go to FNM and he would be like, hey, do you want to like hang out after FNM? And I would be like, I'm kind of tired tonight, but like, you know, maybe some other time. And we ended up like getting coffee one day and finding out that we had things in common other than Magic. And now we've been together for like 2.5 years and it's awesome. I'm not saying, you know, expect to meet your soulmate at your next Magic tournament, but I guess there are right and wrong ways to ask people out in that context.
Yeah, one thing I really liked about the Tumblr post, it was Allison, our friend, the community manager, Allison. Okay. She actually responded to this, and she one of the things I really liked was so she gave three steps or three ways to do it, I guess. And number two was read the signals. And she says, do they seem as engaged as you are? And then number three was double check you read the signals correctly. Mm-hmm. And that's a really good thing, is really look at the situation. Like, does the person seem like they're interested? Are their eyes darting across the room thinking, God, I'd rather be anywhere else than here? You know, are they making eye contact? Are they laughing like real laughter? It's not like, oh God, I want to die. You know, you can tell a lot by body language. You know, are they making themselves smaller? Are they putting their arms in front of their chest? You know, there's, and then if you think that it looks good, give it one more go through your mind. And like, am I really sure about this? And I really appreciated those two things. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, in terms of the buzz off ring, you know, I'm somebody where I've received persistent male attention. You know, like one of the things that I seem to run into a lot is when I'm on the bus to work in the morning, I wear earbuds and I have glasses, and I'm not a morning person. So if I'm on that bus ride to work, I would like to think that those two things very clearly say, don't talk to me. Like, I'm not here for that. And I can't tell you the number of times that I've had somebody flail in front of me, like, hey!
Hey. And
after a couple minutes or like a minute or two, I'll take out my earbuds and I'll say, what? And the guy will look at me and just say, I just wanted to say you were cute, bitch. And it's like, I didn't need you to tell me I was cute. Like, I knew I was cute when I left the house this morning. Like, the fact that you thought I needed to be told that and that I should be thanking you for this or whatever is completely inappropriate. And I've also gone through the list. You know, like, I've had people approach me and I've started off with the, no, thank you. Like, okay, bye. You know, polite. And then I've moved on to the, I'm really not interested, to the, I have a boyfriend. And then after that, you're just like, I'm married. We have kids, lots of kids. I'm losing my hair. Scurvy. You're just saying whatever you can, because there are some people, who just don't get it. And I've even gone so far as there have been times where I've used being trans as a way to get rid of somebody. Where like, if they're really not getting it, I'm just like, you know what? I'm trans. And then they're like, does that mean you've got a, and I'm like, yes. And then they're like, oh, and then they scram. But sometimes it backfires and they're like, I've always wanted to do that. And I'm like, shit. And then I'm really in a bind. But, you know, but yeah, I've definitely been in situations where somebody just doesn't take no for an answer. And, you know, if that's something she's experienced and that works for her, you know, I agree with you all that it's unfortunate. But I can't blame somebody for having those walls up, because I've certainly had to resort to those lines just to get somebody to realize I'm not interested, you know, and that's going back to what we said about looking at the cues, you know, like if you're having to flail to get someone's attention, are they looking at you? Do they seem like they notice? Do they seem like they're interested? No, then maybe I should not proceed.
Yeah. An issue that I've had is like, while judging, I don't know, at all magic tournaments, I try and be like polite and cordial with all my opponents and stuff. But when you're judging, you're in a, you know, even higher responsibility to make everybody's experience really great. And I've had a few instances where people put me in really bad spots while I'm judging, and I'm like, hey, I'm just not interested. And then they kind of like follow you around, and you're like, I have nowhere else to go except this one room. So if you could just quit following me, that'd be great. And it's just, it can be really awkward. Like, people just don't take the hint. And it makes me sad that, you know, sometimes you have to be like, yes, I have a boyfriend, even if you're not in a relationship or something, because I feel like women should just be able to say no because they want to say no. They shouldn't have to make up some excuse to not be interested in somebody. And I guess this goes for men too. Like, if a woman is, you know, persistently pursuing you, you should be able to say no without having to feel like you need to make up some imaginary girlfriend. And I don't know. I just wish that more people were interested in learning about how to interact appropriately, because it seems like the people who, you know, maybe our listeners, or, you know, the people who are interested in trying to improve everything at Magic are already receptive to this, but the people who are trying to, you know, get them to take a second look at themselves are probably not the most receptive to what we're trying to do. And that's really unfortunate and hard to get around.
Well, I think part of it might be the stigma of it. Like, when I retweeted the Tumblr post, somebody had sent me a tweet and they were like, you know, I can't believe that people don't know how to ask somebody out or whatever. And I was like, I can believe it. Like, it's not a natural, like, you know, some people, you know, they call it game. Some people just don't have game. And some people, you know, I'm certainly not in the business of shaming anybody. Like, if it's genuinely a case of that, like, I know people who, you know, I would classify as being like adorably awkward, where I've seen them and they're just blubbering, you know, and there's no malice there. And you can just genuinely look at them and be like, oh, you poor thing, you know, and those people I can absolutely work with, you know. But then there are the ones who just take it to, again, the extremes, where you already covered the, I would like to think that the people who truly just don't know any better would get the hint with like the first two. Like, so let's say you say, no, thank you. Then you get to the, I'm really not interested. And I would like to think that that's the cutoff point for like the people who just are kind of harmless. And then the cutoff point for the ones who are really just sort of no good. Like, the ones that are still going after that, I can't really be bothered with. But the ones who are like, oh, shit, 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 you know, like, you know, those are the ones I'm like, all right, come here. Here's what you could have done differently, you know. And I think that makes the difference between the two. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Also, asking a girl at a magic tournament, are you here alone, is not a good pickup line.
No.
No.
It makes them feel uncomfortable.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah, at Star City Baltimore. I think, you know, he was just awkward, but he did not understand. He did not pick up on the hints that I was avoiding him. Like, I walked away, and then later he was like, hey, here's the chick that is here all alone, to like his friend. And I like walk in the other direction, and then he keeps following me to the vendor, and he's like, so, and I'm like, no, sorry. But yeah, no, that's not a good way to make somebody feel comfortable. Just so everybody knows.
Wow, I'm just imagining him with like a bullhorn, like, hey, it's the girl who was alone, and then everybody's like turns and looks at you like, that's creepy.
That's
how you end up
loud.
In a trunk.
Oh man. Oh, yeah, and I had to tell the person I was talking to, I was like, hey, this guy keeps following me, so I have to go, so see you later. And I had to like cut my conversation short because I didn't know how to tell this other person, like, please just leave me alone and quit telling people I'm here alone as well.
Yeah, wow. One thing I hate about magic tournaments is that if a guy asks you if you're there by yourself and you do say yes, they think it's an invitation to start hitting on you. Like that happened. That happened to me once. I usually go to Magic tournaments, if not with my boyfriend, then with like a group of male friends. And people will usually assume that I'm there with a boyfriend, whether it's actually my boyfriend or they're assuming that one of my male friends is my boyfriend, and they'll just leave me alone. But there was one time that I happened to be at a tournament for a PPTQ that was kind of far away from where I live. It wasn't at the store I usually play at. And, you know, when we go to our local store, everyone knows me. They know my boyfriend. They know we're together, and they just kind of, you know, treat me like anyone else. But at this store, there was, you know, one guy who was playing in the tournament who was like, hey, are you here with anyone? And I was like, nope, I just kind of showed up here to play in a PPTQ, even though I was like the only woman playing. He was just like hitting on me. And I was just like, I'm sorry, dude, I have a boyfriend. Like, sorry. And I just walked away from him. And he kind of took the hint and just left me alone. Or maybe he was embarrassed because he didn't talk to me for the rest of the day. But yeah, that was, I felt bad. Like, I felt bad that I made him uncomfortable, but it was an uncomfortable situation, and there really was no easy way around it.
Mm-hmm. I do want to wrap it up on a positive note, though. I want to say kudos to you, Scott, for making her feel comfortable enough where she kind of let the wall down a little bit, you know, where she said, you know, she was able to look at you and be like, I'm not really married. I'm just here to, you know, because of blah. Like, the fact that she felt comfortable enough to loosen up around you, mm-hmm. I think that says a lot about you. So I want to say kudos to you for that. And whatever you did to make her feel at ease, I hope that you keep doing that with your opponents of both genders, because you sound like a really awesome guy. So bravo to you.
Yeah, and spread mm-hmm. that around to your friends and stuff too.
Yes, please.
Spread the word.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a Canadian thing. You know, he says he's from Ottawa. You know, maybe it's just different over there. Like, the I don't know.
They are so nice.
Yeah.
You know, so polite.
Yeah, they are. So, anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
Yes, I have two things. One, I just wanted to say I appreciate people that help feed my addiction. Four playmats.
Oh my god. Like, how drugs. Many are you up to now?
I have to do a full inventory, but I think it's over 40 now.
Oh my god. This is going to mm-hmm. be, I'm telling you, this is going to be like intervention. Like, we're going to have to lure her somewhere. Like, so Chris, there's an IQ. You want to go to the, no, we'll take you. It's fine. And then she's going to walk in the room and we're all going to have like our handwritten letters. You know, your addiction is affecting your life negatively in the following ways. And
I know. Do you want some more, Chris?
I do. I do. Like I'm ready to just keep on like getting them. I'm so excited because I get to get one over the weekend and everything. And two of our listeners, Courtney and Andrew, they're a couple that listen to the show. They got me the Kitty Jace playmat from the pre-release at the Star City store. So I just wanted to, yeah, it's really cute. And it came today, so I'm really excited. And I just wanted to say thank you to them. And also just to say that Aaron and I are going to go to the Star City Open in Chicago this weekend. So if anyone's listening and is going to be there, come and say hi to us.
Katie, you are what they say on intervention. You are loving Chris to death.
Yes. That's what they do. That's kind of my MO.
but then you guys can bury me in the playmats.
Wait, I have a serious question.
Sure.
How do you display your playmats? Like, I'm going through my magic stuff and trying to declutter, and I also have like 30 plus playmats, and
what?
I cannot possibly use them all. And they just sit there, and I don't even know what I have because they're all like in a stack or they're rolled up. Like, how do I?
Well, Gabby Sparks was saying that she hangs her up on her mats on the wall, which is thumbtacks, and that's what she does. And it's very simple, and hers look great.
Oh, girl, there's not enough wall.
Yeah, I'm hoping to do something similar to that. Like, if we end up moving at the end of the year, if we end up getting like a house to rent, I'd like to try to hang them up like in one of the rooms, like with like some what do you call it? Like the laundry line string or something, and kind of just hold them up there with like clothespins or something like that. Because right now they're in a box, they're all rolled up and standing up straight. But with the two that I got in the mail today and the one I'm going to get this weekend, I don't think I have any more room. So it's bad.
boxes full up.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking of the wrapping your body. Like, I keep thinking of that scene. Of, you know how sometimes you see in, like, movies when somebody dies and they wrap them in, like, a really big rug and then dump them in a garbage fill? God forbid something ever happens to you. We'll just wrap you in play mats and something.
I'm completely okay with this.
She died doing what she loved, just being your own play mats.
Hell yeah.
Also, on that note, if anybody wants to buy some playmats, I'm looking to downsize my collection.
Oh, no.
So if you're a listener and you're looking for a specific mat, I may or may not have it. But get at me.
Chris is firing up the PayPal as we speak.
I'm ready.
We can save on shipping. I can put them all in one box.
Oh my god.
I gotta cut this off. I'm actually really excited about the SCG Open, though. I understand we're playing at a soccer field. Like, I'm wondering if there's gonna be like AstroTurf. Like, are we literally gonna be playing in the field, or are they gonna like remove the grass somehow? Like, how's that gonna go down?
Wait, is the whole thing gonna be outdoors?
No, it's in an indoor sporting arena. But the last time we were there, it was the biggest area as a soccer field. And somebody described it that way on Twitter today. And I was just like, well, if we're playing on turf, I better not wear heels because that could be awkward. Like, how am I supposed to dress for a tournament in a soccer field? Like,
Yeah.
That'll be cool. I mean, I played in a basketball court before, so I can just check that off my list and
get all the different sports types.
I will say, though, that the venue has an amazing, like, food snack area. Like, they had, like, fruit and water, and they took credit cards, and there was no minimum. The popcorn was burned, but everything else was great. So I'm excited. We get to see our friend Patrick Sullivan.
Yay!
Who we love. We're going to see about smuggling Hallie some Tassipur mats so she can bring them back to the cat ladies in Washington.
Yeah, the cat ladies will be really happy about that.
Yeah, so we're going to see what we can do. If anything, I think if push comes to shove, we'll just line. Like, Chris can sneak the play mats under her clothes, and then we'll smuggle her through the TSA, and that's how we'll get them out there in time for PAX.
I'll do it.
Not even a hesitation. Not like, is this gonna work? Just, I'll do it. Just fucking in. So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they get a hold of you all? How can they find you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can watch me stream at twitch.tv/HalcanSan. This is the last week that I will be taking night courses in computer science, so I'll have more time to stream. And I'll have a more consistent schedule from now on. So if you check my Twitch page or my Twitter account, I will be providing updates about that. You can send me an email at hcsmtg@gmail.com and read my articles here on Gathering Magic.
I'm Katie, and I am, thanks to Hallie, all set up to stream, and I will be
you
doing
too?
My first. Yeah, we're all getting into it. Oof. Join in the club. Hey.
Girl, nobody wants to see me playing Dredge and singing Kylie Minogue. Nobody.
I already told you I would want to see that.
Me too.
Okay, on Intervention, they call this enabling. Like, you do not want to enable me, I'm telling you.
I think that you should quit watching Intervention.
No! They need to watch Intervention and Hoarders back to back.
Oh.
What if your addiction is watching episodes of Intervention?
That's so meta. You're loving yourself to death. Totally. All right, go on, Katie.
Okay, so you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/meanmuggermtg. You've heard that, right? MEANMUGGER. You can also find me at Twitter at meanmugger and by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
Mean mugger? Is that because you like coffee?
That's what a revised angel would do. She's all about that coffee. I have resting bitch face a lot. And
oh, me too.
It turns out we all do. Didn't we have this talk on Twitter?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it all came about because of that picture that I posted a while ago when I was playing in a pre-TQ, and ever since then my mom has been like, are you mean mugging them today? Like, every time I go to Magic, I'm like, I'm sure I am unintentionally.
I don't think it's, you know, it's funny. I like to describe my resting bitch face as I'm saving my smiles for the people who deserve it. Because if you just hand out smiles to everybody, then they don't, it's like swearing. If you just swear for the sake of swearing, then it loses its meaning. It loses its purpose. Same thing with smiles. If you smile at everybody, but if you smile for the people you really enjoy, then it really means something, you know?
Yeah.
I totally
and
agree.
If you glare at them, I guess it doesn't mean anything.
Awesome.
Sorry, and that was a negative note. My bad.
You're cool, Katie. You're cool. And I'm Chris. My Twitter is THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ. That's Yo to Chris. And my Tumblr is also to Chris.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus, OriginalOestrus. You can email me at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. You can find the show every Friday at Gathering Magic. And you can email the show at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening and for putting up with our sound quibbles. And we will talk to you soon. Bye.